Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I'm Tim. And welcome to our show today. It's on our topic today is the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez, who was a serial killer in on the west coast of the United States back in the mid 1980s. He only committed murders for about a little over a year, but he done a lot of damage in that time. He was responsible for numerous murders. We're going to get into all that. But before we do, let me introduce, as always, our panel. I'm joined by the very intelligent, very charming, How would you describe her, Colonel?
Evil.
Very sweet, Brandy. How's it going, Brandy?
Well, I'm not on the same page yet.
I'm good, Timmy. How are you?
Fine. And this is a topic that you selected. So, are you excited?
I'm so excited.
Okay, good. And
she got goosebumps. I can see goosebumps on her.
Yeah, she does have goosebumps. Well, you know, I think this is like one of those things. She was probably one of the ones writing him in prison, you know, because he had a lot of...
I believe the devil may be a serial killer groupie.
Yeah. We'll get into that in a little bit, because he did have some women writing and actually... proposed to him. I'm also joined here, as always, by the very distinguished, honorable, and debonair, the most dangerous man in podcasting, Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm displeased, Timmy.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, you know, now you're getting a reputation, Colonel, because your friend Scott...
As being a whiny bitch, that's what you're getting a reputation as.
It's funny you say that, because Scott said, it sounded like the Colonel was a little whiny in the last podcast.
Did you say he was?
Well, you know, there's I don't want to air dirty laundry on the show.
Okay. I know you don't.
But since I dropped Scott from the ticket, he's been a little...
He's been like Spiro Agnew was with Richard Nixon.
He's been a little contentious with the Colonel. And I understand that because Scott was, I probably should have thought more about exposing
him. He kind of threw him under the campaign bus.
Well, the boy was drinking, he was gambling. The women at the things, you couldn't get drinks or anything from because Scott was groping them all the time.
You know, I do not believe that's
true. It got to be an embarrassment for the Colonel because, you know, I'm a proper gentleman, Timmy.
Well, he's went on to greener pastures. He has his own podcast now.
He does have his own podcast
now. And I haven't heard you on there. It's the Bastards of the Universe.
Bastards of the Universe, and it's. I would recommend that you guys check that out.
Yeah, it's on Podcast Garden. So, Colonel...
Yeah, because Scott is one of the bastards of the universe. Cost me the presidents, but, you know, I don't harbor any bitterness towards Scott.
As long as you're not bitter at
all. Yeah, as long as you just, you know, you're forgiving. Colonel...
And not a pissy
bitch. We have any shout-outs today?
We got a regular three in Celine... apparently has retracted her offer for me to stay in Michigan with her.
Wisely.
Right. And, you know, I may have been misleading a little bit about Storm. I'm not sure there was a bear. It might have been a squirrel.
In your last podcast, you said our friend Knut in Norway, his dog Storm had killed a bear, but you're saying now...
Apparently it was a very... It was a large, angry squirrel.
Okay.
But they can be fierce.
Yeah, they can. Okay. So you want to clarify that. So hey to Canute. And thank you to Celine for sending us some suggestions for future topics. She posted that on our Facebook page. And we're going to take a look at those because there's some cool ones in there, ones that I hadn't seen before.
And Celine, so. you don't know what kind of beast you're feeding here, because Timmy is down in all, he's in our offices all the time handing us papers for, you're
going to
do this, you're going to do that, you're going to do this. And it used to be we'd sit around and come up and say, what would be a good one to do? What would be a good one to do? And it was kind of... Devil, wouldn't you say it was kind of a democratic process?
It was, not a dictatorship.
And now Tim is just completely the dictator here. He's in charge of everything.
I don't know what to say. All I can say is that our ratings have been going through the roof, and we've been getting more and more listeners, and I think that's directly as a result of my efforts.
I'll get into this at a different time. I'm a little disturbed. My wife and my kids have betrayed me.
They have not betrayed you. They are
supporting.
Could
you be a little more dramatic?
The Colonel is upset because, as you know, the Colonel is a Denver Broncos fan like myself. But we live in Cincinnati, and the Cincinnati Bengals are 8-0, and they're having a good year. And instead of celebrating that, the Colonel is being a little vindictive.
I'm not being vindictive, Timmy. I just said, here's the thing. Last year, you remember, and for our listeners, Devin still was a player to play for the Broncos, or for the Bengals. His little daughter, beautiful little girl, you remember her.
Yes.
Has cancer. She's in remission apparently right now. And the Bengals kept him on the team so he could keep his insurance for 5 years.
Yes.
And it's a very kind move of them to do him. And my family's always been...
Uncharacteristically kind.
Yeah, strangely kind. And my family has always been diehard Broncos fans. And this hit real... this really touched my wife. And she... She kind of got...
Changed her alliances
a little bit, mm-hmm. And she's creeping more... And then I come home last night, Timmy, and a woman got a Bengals jersey on. Now, she has 3 perfectly good Bronco jerseys in her thing, and I told her, you know, Renee...
Were the Broncos playing?
No.
It doesn't matter.
So then it doesn't matter.
I told her... But Sunday she had a Bengals t-shirt on.
Good choice, Renee. Hooday.
And I said to the woman, I said, look here, girl. I said, now had I come home...
You didn't say any of this.
Found you in bed with another... That, you know, we're going to have a little bit of problem, and I'm going to... But we'll work that out. You know, we'll work that out. You tell me you're having an affair, you tell me you spend all my money, whatever. I mean, we can work all that out.
You give her a pass.
But you come home and you got a Bengals jersey on... And that's just betrayal. And then we're texting during the game, and my oldest boy, Taylor, I'm like, Taylor, hold on, son. And he said, Dad, this is through a message. He says, Dad, I have to tell you, I've always kind of, my whole life, I've kind of liked the Bengals more. Now, Taylor's an identical twin, and this may have been harsh, I don't know. And I said, you know, Taylor, well, that's fair enough because I always liked your brother more. So.
Yeah.
So anyway, Lady Beverly's getting much better, so we're happy to hear that. She's out just
have you heard
being
from her.
Yes, I have. I see her on Facebook, and she is, if I'm the most dangerous man in podcasting, she's the most dangerous lady in England. That's what. To describe her,
have
a little bit of a problem at the house. I shampooed my carpets, Timmy.
Did you?
And
I just say I'm fine, and we move on.
My carpets, and I didn't really know how the carpet machine worked.
And I got to hear about his colonoscopy.
So I just kept squirting the carpet juice or whatever on the floor.
Carpet juice
and water and whatnot. You know, it gets all the stuff out.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really vacuuming it up. It wasn't. So I don't know how the whole thing operates.
Is this? Are we going to be able to get to our podcast soon?
Meth heads can. This is how I came upon a new sponsor.
Okay.
So I had to get something to dry out my carpets, and I looked up, and you know, you can get those big industrial fans or whatnot. And I got the best service, and I told them if the service was so good, you know, I found them on Craigslist. They're supposed to bring me some fans over to the house to dry, blow and dry the carpet, I guess.
What's their name, Colonel?
Betty's Blowers.
Okay.
And my assumption is that they got these big fans that they're going to bring over.
Industrial fans?
Yeah, I got, you know, I got to meet them at a weird place to get the fans. I don't know why they can't bring them to the house, but it was like... I can host, and I don't know what that meant, but anyway, I found Betty's Blowers on Craigslist, and
so she can host, and
she can host. So I guess I go over there and pick up the fans.
And I'm not sure why a girlfriend experience is needed, but I guess she offers that as well.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? The girlfriend experience is where they say, "Oh, I understand completely how that happened," instead of saying, "You're so stupid, I can't believe you did."
This is where they say, "Honey, let me clean the carpet for you."
Yeah, it's like something like that. Yeah. So Betty's Blowers, you can find her on Craigslist.
Yeah, under Casual Encounters.
Yeah.
That's a weird place for it. Yeah. Okay, let's get on. Move on to our topic. Shout outs to my mom. Shout outs to Casey. Yes.
We all love you here. We all think about you every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
We all wonder, Dottie.
And Casey, join us again soon, please. Okay. Let's
just pretend Brittany ain't even part of the group.
Brittany is part of the group, but, you know, I think they only let her, you know, she has to be in group most of the day, so I don't think that she
does. The poor girl. I kept telling her if she didn't lay off the alcohol, she's going to have a breakdown.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure she'll be sober and back with us soon. So.
She made me a nice ashtray, though.
I think she's working in really occupational therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was beautiful.
We're only kidding. Brittany is working and can't be with us today. All right, so we're going to talk about the Night Stalker, who was a... this is an interesting story, actually. Brandy wanted to do this, and you know, I knew kind of about the story, but not all the details. And it's he was a pretty creepy guy. Richard Ramirez... who was born Ricardo Ramirez, was an American serial killer, rapist, and a burglar.
And a what?
A burglar.
A what?
A burglar. Okay. Yeah.
Burglar.
Like a hamburglar.
A burglar.
I don't know. You're adding extra syllables in. I was confused.
I speak like I want.
A burglar.
A burglar. Yeah. He broke into people's homes.
Smartest motherfucker in the room.
Yes.
He got 38 degrees, but can't say burglar.
Hey. What can I say? That's why I went into podcasting, because enunciation is my specialty.
Yes.
Okay, so he was a highly publicized home invasion. He went on a highly publicized home invasion crime spree and terrorized the residents of Greater Los Angeles and San Francisco from June of 1984 until August of 1985. So as I said, it was a really relatively short period, 1 year. Prior to his capture, he was dubbed the Night Stalker by the news media, and he kind of owned that name. He kind of liked that, and so he started telling his victims that survived his brutal attacks to tell them that they were a victim of the Night Stalker. So he kind of liked that moniker. He probably used it as his AOL email account, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah.
Nightstalker@hotmail.com.
Yeah.
Or AOL at the time.
He used a variety of weapons in his attacks, including handguns, knives, a machete, a tire iron, and a hammer. If he had a hammer,
he'd hammer in the morning.
And he did.
You know, that's the thing about this guy.
He actually hammered more in the evening. But.
He's one of the most resourceful sumbitches you ever
met. Yeah, his M.O. was kind of crazy because he
didn't have an M.O.
No, he would mix it up quite a bit.
And you know what you got to respect about a band like this?
Nothing.
He didn't, you know, all these guys has got to leave their signature marks at the crime and leave the victim's pose. He wasn't about all that. He was just about straight killing the people.
Well, although he did tell, he kind of got it built, he kind of...
He got egotistical.
He kind of started reading his own press clippings and got into being the Night Stalker. He was an avowed Satanist, much like our friend Brandy over here.
True.
But he never expressed any remorse for his crimes.
Because he wasn't.
He was sentenced to death for 13 murders. He got 13 death sentences.
Which is kind of overkill.
Well, he died before... He died of cancer before being executed, so he actually did not, you could argue he never really did pay for his crimes other than...
No, he got the butt cancer, Jimmy.
I mean, he got the butt cancer.
He got the butt cancer.
He didn't pay for his own crimes. He sat in his jail cell. He got 3 hots and a cot. Nobody messed with him. And he got married.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to get in. So let's talk about his life, and then Brandy can get into all the murders. I mean, this guy was...
Prolific.
He was prolific. So Ramirez was born in El Paso, Texas, and I've been in El Paso, and it's a very, I don't know what to say about it. It's a place. he was there on February 29th. He was born on February 29th. Leap year. Leap year, baby. In 1960, which was, of course, about a year and a half before I was born. Just throwing that out there.
Of course.
My birthday being May the 9th. He was the youngest of Julian and Mercedes Ramirez. They had 5 children. Richard Ricardo, young Ricardo, was the youngest. His father was a Mexican national and former Juarez policeman. And if you know El Paso, it's right across the border.
Juarez is... about the most dangerous place in the world.
That's where they have a lot of houses of ill reputes in Juarez, Mexico.
A lot of beheadings too.
Now because they have the drug wars. But they're in Juarez. You just walk across the bridge from El Paso to Juarez, and that's where they. If you go there to see a prostitute, you have to see a dick inspector first, which is a little old lady who basically has to see your wiener. Mm-hmm. And she gives you the once-over and decides if you're healthy or not, and then you can proceed.
Is she a doctor?
Well, see, I don't know. You feel kind of good after you get the thumbs up, because then you know you've been seen by a medical professional.
Now, hold on just for a second, Timmy.
Yeah.
So they're basically... the eyeballing you, Johnson, is what they're doing.
What happens?
You're not getting blood drawn or peeing in a cup. No, they're just eyeballing.
Say you meet a young lady in the bar, mm-hmm. and the young lady and you hit it off, and then you want to spend time with her socially. Mm-hmm. So you go upstairs. You would go upstairs, but before you see that young lady, this woman about 115 years old comes out. Now, your first thought is, "Oh, this is the old bait and switch, right?" But really, she's the dick inspector, and she...
Does she have a card that says dick inspector?
No, she puts out her hand with some tissue. Now, this is all...
Oh, she uses tissue, so this is hygienic.
She does. She's a very hygienic lady. And now, this is all, remind you, this is just from, word of mouth I've heard, stories I've heard.
Tales you've heard.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she puts... So she's like 150 years old, and she holds out her hand with this pieces of toilet paper, and... says, "Wiener, wiener," because that's the only English she can speak. And if there was a customer there, they would expose themselves to this medical professional. And I guess, unless there's like blood or open sores or something.
I mean, and I guess maybe we need to run down there and have an interview or something. Because what is the cutoff? I mean, is it just like large open sores?
See, I think it's a gray area.
Is there
area.
A chart that she carries with it?
I didn't notice
the
chart.
A magnifying glass.
But she says wiener. And then if she gives you the all clear, being the medical professional that she is, then you can proceed to be with the young lady. But you must have, you first, you have to get her clearance. And I must tell you, it you know, it makes the person feel good and makes the person feel like they've had, you know, a...
Now, do you get a certificate that... Because I think
what it's like... around and do it, or...
No, keep in mind...
Do they put a stamp on your hand in case you come back later on?
This is all secondary information.
Like if you... Okay, but what I'm wondering is, do they stamp your hand?
I don't think they stamp anything.
Do they stamp your wiener?
No, I don't think so. I think she gives it the once over, and if she gives you the thumbs up, you're good to go. Now, if there's reason for more tests, I don't know exactly what they do.
There's thumbs down.
You probably have to give her $10 or something. I don't know.
This gonna cost extra.
Yeah,
this gonna cost.
So if you're ever in Juarez and you want, you know, you want to get a screening. There's people there that will do it for you.
Well, I don't think it'd be a bad idea to have your penis inspected once in a while.
Well, I think you're right. It couldn't hurt.
Well, you know, and I will.
You probably need it inspected after you see the girl.
I would think that would be the more prudent thing.
And I don't know that we're going to finish this podcast, but I got to tell a quick story.
Okay.
My doctor's out of town.
Yeah.
I had an incident walking through a store. Where it's called testicular torsion.
Mm-hmm.
And basically...
You twisted your wiener.
They hang from little cords and they can turn. And it's the most painful thing you ever experience. I mean, it's worse than a kidney stone. It's worse than anything. So they had to take me to the emergency room for this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wanted me to follow. And they got it straightened out. They just turned them around, unspun them. It was like a yo-yo, you know.
Kind of like a slinky when they get all...
Yeah, when they get all tangled up.
Yeah, yeah.
So my doctor not in town, so I got to go see my wife's doctor. Now, my wife's doctor is an attractive woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go see the doctor. Now, the doctor looked me over and everything, and, you know, I go back home.
Okay.
Now, it's my wife's doctor, and my wife said, well, what did the doctor have to say? And I said, she just said, that's pretty impressive.
But she did not say that. And was that your entire story?
That was the point of your whole story?
That was the point of the story.
Oh, Jesus. Well, God.
Testicular torsion is... we need to have
a fun room?
Awareness. Testicular torsion awareness.
You want to do a bucket thing?
And we should wear purple for it.
Okay. Okay. We'll look into getting a GoFundMe page for that. Now, can we go back to Richard Ramirez, please?
If you guys would stay on topic, and I just have to say, had a lovely guest walk in, so...
Yeah.
Say hello, Nicole.
Say hello, Nicole.
Hello.
We have Nicole here who is sitting in on the podcast just to listen, so welcome, Nicole. And you'll be a star now, and you'll have stalkers, and it will be a whole crazy thing.
Brittany, you little skank, we're replacing your alcoholic ass.
It's not a skank nor an alcoholic. Okay, let's get back to Richard Ramirez. Richard Ramirez, born in El Paso, as I said, which was right across the bridge from Juarez, Mexico, where his dad had worked as a police officer. Now, his dad had a temper, and he was very abusive to Richard as a child. Richard also sustained two serious head injuries as a child when he was 2 years old. A dresser fell on top of him, causing his forehead laceration, requiring 30 stitches to close. So that wasn't a good thing. And then when he was 5 years old, he was knocked unconscious by a park swing. And he started experiencing frequent epileptic seizures.
Epileptic?
It persisted into his early teen years. Now, you know, talked about other serial killers where they've had some head injuries. You know,
a lot of them have
Chuck having a head injury.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? This kind of plays into that because you remember back in the day, Timmy, the swings.
Yeah.
They weren't the curved things they are now.
Oh, playgrounds were dangerous as hell.
I'll tell you, it was like a minefield.
We had monkey bars.
You remember a bunch of babies.
You had monkey bars on concrete.
No, Timmy. Well, hold on.
It's called Darwinism.
Now, my friend Bobby Hanekamp, his sister,
a loyal listener.
No, Bobby Hanekamp dead now.
Well, probably doesn't listen.
His sister was...
Not going to get any downloads from him.
Death follows
him.
Everywhere.
Everyone he knows, he's got... Everyone story he tells is about someone dead.
So his sister climbs to the top of the monkey bars. Now, Bobby Hanekamp, being the mean little son of a bitch he is, goes up, pushes his sister, and the girl like a pinball, hitting every bar on the way down. But, so yeah, they had to take her and get stitches. I think she knocked some of her teeth out, too.
Did she end up being a serial killer?
He ended up going to prison for some stuff, and then he died. But okay. We're really better off without him.
Okay, can we get back to Richard Ramirez?
No, I was going to talk about the swings real quick.
Okay.
When a colonel was a kid, my brother used to dare me to do crazy stuff. Yeah. And
he dared me
to jump off one of those swings.
I just want to point out, this is Friday afternoon. I have to do a podcast with Scott on Sunday, so if we could kind of wrap it up.
Well, you're talking kind of slow. This is what people want to hear, is more Colonel, less Night Star.
Oh, yeah, we get that.
So anyway.
We get that a lot.
Yeah.
I get to the apex of where the swing goes up real high.
Uh-huh.
And I jump off.
Uh-huh.
And I land, and I'm so proud because I'm trying to impress my big brother. You know, right. You know how y'all are with your big brother.
Yeah.
The damn swing come back, hit me right in the forehead.
That's
I had to get
lot.
Four stitches.
It's one of their visual things. It probably would have been funny to see, but.
No, it was horrid.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Colonel. Thank you for that story. Okay.
Harrowing.
Richard Ramirez, he had some head issues. He kept getting hit in the head. And anyway, he started having these seizures after he was hitting his head with the swing.
Scissors?
Seizures okay. When he was hitting the head.
Seizures.
When he was hitting the head at the park. So at 12 years old, he had an older cousin named Miguel or Mike Ramirez, and he was a veteran of the Vietnam War. He was a U.S. Green Beret. He was a combat veteran. And Mike was kind of his pal. He kind of looked up to him, older brother type of cousin. He would talk to Richard about he would boast to Richard about some of his exploits during the Vietnam War. He had Polaroid photos of his victims that he killed, Vietnamese, including Vietnamese women that he raped. So he would tell Richard all these horrible stories, showing these photos of civilians with their heads severed, women that he had abused in Vietnam. And they would get high, they would smoke dope and talk about these, his war stories, whatever. So he was exposed to this. And he taught young Richard some of his military training. He taught him how to kill and, taught him how to use weaponry, that sort of thing. So he's learned some skills that he would put to use later on. Now, around this time... Richard, as I said, his father was pretty abusive, and Richard didn't like staying in the house. He was scared of his father. So guess what he did, Brandy?
What?
Richard would sleep in the local cemetery.
That's not some place for him.
Yeah, so it beats, I guess, Motel 6.
Does it? Because they at least leave a light on for you.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, I guess, sleep in a local cemetery, but that's what Richie did. He was known as Richie by his family, by the way. Now, Richie was present when his cousin Mike shot and killed his wife, Jessie, Mike's wife, Jessie, in the face with a .38 caliber revolver during a domestic argument. On May 4th, 1973. After the shooting, Richie kind of became withdrawn from his family and his peers, and probably slept back into the graveyard. I don't know what.
Well, and I think that woman, that girl that he killed, I think she sort of helped take care of him.
Yeah, well.
I mean, he always was at their house. I think she kind of helped take
care of him. Yeah, he must have a relationship.
He had a relationship
with
her.
Yeah, so he became more and more distant from his family. He went in to move in with his older sisters, Ruth and her husband, Roberto. And Roberto was an interesting guy. He was an obsessive peeping Tom. I guess he was a peeping Roberto.
Ruth and Roberto.
And, trying to be a good role model, he would take Richie along on his nocturnal exploits.
Well.
Don't you think being a peeping Tom is...
Peeping Roberto.
Or Roberto and Jesus, whatever that was. And maybe, I'm reading this and hearing all these names, and thinking maybe Donald Trump right, but...
Did you... Seriously, you just said that.
I don't know. I'm just saying. But anyway, don't you think it's a compliment to the women?
These are just... Huh?
Don't you think it's kind of a compliment to the women? I mean, you're going to crawl all the way up and look into the window? That's,
no, dude, that's
I mean, I think
creepy.
That's the highest form of flattery to a woman. That you're going to peek in the window and look at
Okay. I'll make sure to let Renee.
Ain't nobody
want to
look
way.
At an ugly woman. So if you're,
I'm
going to
tell
time,
Renee now that you think peeping is okay.
I didn't say it's okay.
No, I'm
going to
make
it's
sure
flattery,
that she knows
that it's.
Well, I'm going to make sure that she knows.
Did the man think you're attractive?
Well, this is before they had. Wants to look at, this is before webcams so.
And internet porn.
Yeah,
and then well, that's true.
Yeah. So so
you,
during
how do you know so much about internet porn?
So during this time, Richard started experimenting with LSD.
Yes.
And cultivated an interest in Satanism, much like Brandy.
The devil over
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
That's not true. Okay.
Did you ever see him at the meetings? Or
saw your mom there.
Mike Ramirez.
No, hold on, stop. I got to call shenanigans. You do not talk about Dottie Scott that way. Take
He's
it back now,
mom.
Devil. My mom's dead.
How about your mom?
Oh, his mom's dead. His mom's,
my mom's dead.
Dead.
Yeah. Then I guess she can't refute that claim, can she?
You can't defame the dead. She's got a point.
That was wrong, devil.
Yeah. You know his brother died as well?
Everybody dies.
And his cousin and his... your cousin who fell off the monkey bars? His
cousin Clem.
Yeah.
My cousin Clem.
Death is his best friend.
Not my brother-in-law.
Death is your companion.
His co-pilot.
Death is his co-pilot. Okay, anyway. Back to Ramirez. So his cousin Mike Ramirez was found guilty of murder. By reason of sanity, but they took in consideration his combat record as a mitigating factor. I guess he raped and decapitated enough Viet Cong that they kind of threw him a bone. He was released in 1977 after serving 4 years in prison.
So he got rewarded.
No, at the Texas State Mental Hospital for the murder of his wife, Jessie. So... But that wasn't Richard. That was his cousin. But he had a lot of influence over Richard. And so Richard at this time, he started hanging out with his cousin Roberto, doing his Peeping Tom thing. Started, you know, he's doing LSD, worshiping Satan. Basically.
He's got a full plate.
Yeah, his plate's full. He's you know, he's a young man. He's got a lot of things going on. But he started having these sexual fantasies with violence, including bondage and rape. Again, you take the name Richard out, put in Brandy. I mean, it just flows. Okay,
you know, things are hurtful.
Right,
me right here.
I'm
I don't
sorry.
Understand. You all think I have no heart.
No, I'm just saying that you have your beliefs, and we're a tolerant podcast.
We're
not
tolerant
a tolerant podcast.
We're very tough. Okay, Richard Ramirez, let's move along because otherwise we'll get a podcast that goes an hour and 47 minutes like last time.
Uh-huh.
And
it's because Chuck kept yammering.
Yeah. Well, anyway, back to Ramirez. And you know, Celine, by the way, says I give you guys a hard time. She says I should ease up on you.
I think she's
Did Celine
very
use
woman.
The word you dick to me?
No, she did
oh,
not.
Okay.
She's a lady.
She
wouldn't
probably
use that
should've.
Term. Okay, so anyway. Richard began having these sexual fantasies with violence, including bondage and rape. And while still in school, he
so took those up, are peculiar things to have, is
yeah.
what you're saying?
Something wrong with that? So while he was still in school, he took a job at the local Holiday Inn, which is a good
motel,
place for
motel.
A
motel.
That's where to go.
Yeah. He used the pass key to rob sleeping patrons.
Yes.
And apparently that was frowned upon.
Frowned upon.
Because he was abruptly fired.
Abruptly?
Yeah, because...
Dude, what's wrong with you?
His employment ended abruptly.
I believe
abruptly.
The man had a stroke today before he came
over. Well, I've been on this podcast for 35 years.
It's like a fucking telethon right here, Timmy.
I mean, I'm telling you, I'm not used to podcasting for 8 hours at a time. His employment ended abruptly after a hotel guest returned to his room and found Ramirez attempting to rape his wife.
That can be a problem.
Yeah. I'm sure there's something in the personnel policy addresses that.
You're not going to.
That's at least a verbal warning, I would think.
You're not going to tip the maid when that happens.
No. So though the husband beat Ramirez senseless at the scene, criminal charges were dropped when the couple who lived out of the state declined to return to testify against him. So again, there's another example we always go through where someone has a chance to testify.
They could have stopped him.
They could have. They
basically this is all their fault.
Well, he may have saved 17 or 13 lives had they testified against him, but. You know, he'd probably been out in a week and a half, so who knows.
Well, and again, we were talking about this earlier. You know, he wasn't a strong guy. He wasn't a big guy. He relied on the element of surprise. So the fact that somebody beat the hell out of him, mm-hmm. not shocking.
Yeah.
He was scrawny.
Yeah, he was kind of scrawny. But anyway, he dropped out of high school in the ninth grade and, and continued his odd sleeping habits of sleeping in the cemetery. And at age 22, he moved to California from Texas, and that's when his shenanigans started to really kick in.
That's when things picked up. So
you gonna put the candy crush down now and tell us the story?
I'm gonna try and do my part.
Well, if you just
do
your part,
you
put your damn phone down.
Yeah, and he did a lot of murders. So he committed a lot of murders.
Don't worry about what I'm doing. I got.
Let's just hit the highlights of the murders, okay? They dead.
Whole pocket full of shish right here for you.
I'm just saying, they ain't coming back to life. You ain't got to give them all.
Well, my
props.
God. Yeah, but we may join them before you let me do this, so shut up.
Couldn't say nothing about my mom.
Your
dead.
Mom. Yeah, I know.
His mom passed away.
I heard somewhere. All right, so he started on April 10th of 1984. There was a 9-year-old, her name was Mae Lung. Who was found murdered in a hotel basement where Ramirez was living in the Tenderloin district of San Francisco.
I stayed there.
I assume that's the gay district.
No,
it's the Chinese district.
No.
It's not the Chinese district. That's Chinatown.
No.
It's the
Tenderloin district is a district in, it's near downtown. It's north of Market Street. It's kind of the bad part of town, but it's there's a lot of interesting characters live there. But there's also a lot of homeless, like heroin addicts and stuff on the street. But
so beat that right in.
I stayed there when I was out there. It was nice. I mean, it was nice.
I don't... What
the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, it's either a bad part of town.
What does that mean?
The Power Exchange was there, and they had... That's a place where it's like a swingers place.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Did you stay there?
No, I went to House of Blues, which is also in the
Tenderloin. So they have revitalized the Tenderloin district.
A little bit, but there's still some shenanigans going on.
Sure.
Did they have the Wiener Inspector at the Power Exchange?
I think that's illegal.
The Wiener Inspector.
I didn't go to the Power Exchange, so I cannot answer that question.
So this little girl had been raped, beaten, and stabbed to death, and her body was found hanging from a pipe. This was actually his first known killing, but not identified as such. Until 2009, when his DNA was matched to DNA obtained at the crime scene.
So this is the first victim of his that we know about for sure.
So then he took a month off, and on June 28th of 1984, he visited 79-year-old Jeannie Vincow, and she was brutally murdered in her apartment in Glassell Park. She'd been stabbed repeatedly. While asleep in her bed, and her throat was slashed so deep that she was nearly decapitated. On March 17th, 1985, so he went underground for a little while, traveled a little bit, did some work.
Yeah.
And on March...
Took in a movie or two.
Sure. March 17th, 1985, Ramirez attacked 22-year-old Maria Hernandez outside her home in Rosemead. He shot her in the face with a .22-caliber handgun after she pulled into her garage. But she survived... when the bullet ricocheted off her keys as she held her hands up to protect herself. Inside the house, her roommate, Dale Ozaski, who was 34, heard the gunshots and ducked behind a counter when she saw Ramirez enter the kitchen. I don't know why that's funny.
Well, I'm just hoping that one of my... If I ever am walking in the house and somebody shoot me in the face...
She was in her car!
Okay, I'm in my car. I'm coming into my house. Somebody shoot me in the face.
Uh-huh.
I'm hoping somebody in the house ain't just ducking down behind the counter.
What do you want them to do?
Well,
there's guns all over my house. Somebody grab a damn gun and start shooting back.
Well, nobody will avenge you.
This doesn't turn out very well for the roommate.
No, she ducks behind the counter. She gets behind the counter, and she saw Ramirez enter her kitchen. And for whatever reason, she raised her head to see what was going on, and he shot her in the forehead and killed her.
See, never raise your head, if you're... Never peek out.
It's from that text. And you know what? Had the woman been armed and shooting back, that would have never happened. That's why I say everybody in the country should arm themselves.
Within an hour.
Okay, there,
all
dead.
Yes, right. No, right? Within an hour, Ramirez pulled 30-year-old you would be better at these names, Timmy. Saline.
What's that? That's you. That's
we
racist.
We got another Asian one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They called her Veronica.
Timmy probably went out with a
But he pulled her out of her car in Monterey Park and shot her twice with a .22 caliber handgun and fled. Didn't even steal her car, just shot her and took off. She was pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital. The two murders and the third and the attempted murder in a single day attracted extensive coverage from the news media, who dubbed the curly-haired attacker with bulging eyes and wide-spaced rotting teeth the walk-in killer and the valley intruder.
Man, which neither, no, man.
Neither one of those are very
They're not
creative.
Very cool names.
They're not cool.
And why pick on a man's teeth?
Well, it's descriptive, I suppose. So that was on March 17th.
You know that Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols got his name because of his bad teeth?
Mm-hmm.
All right. On March 27th, 1985, Ramirez entered a home that he had burgled a year
burgled?
Earlier.
Burgled?
A burgered?
Burgled.
Bungled?
Burgled.
Bungled?
He had burglared the home.
He buggered? He no. buggered a whole home.
Burglared.
Okay.
Burgled.
He was a buggerer too, huh?
Burgled.
Burgled, okay.
Oh, did not so what that means right there, burgled, that means fuck yourself. That's what that means.
Well, there goes our G rating.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway,
yeah,
he'd been there.
I think that went with the Dick Inspector
okay,
talk
here
conversation.
Here we go. He robbed the place a year before, and then he came back. It was in Whittier, California.
Well, they had a chance to, they had a chance to buy some more stuff.
That's a reason. Well,
he actually broke into their house about 2 a.m., killed sleeping Vincent Zazara, who was 64 with a gunshot wound to his head from a .22.
At least he's cutting Asians a break, finally.
Well, I know, finally. Zazara's wife, Maxine, who was 44. Goodness gracious.
What is that? 64 and 44.
Yeah. Somebody
was getting... She about to kill him anyway.
Well,
she,
right. It was about that time.
She was about a week away from a heart attack.
Yeah, she was 44. She was almost a man.
She was awakened by her husband's murder. It woke her up.
That didn't...
She can't get no sleep.
Considerate some bitch.
Woke her... Well, you know...
Didn't he have a stroke or something?
She's
quietly?
It's either snoring or somebody getting beaten beside you. It's a horrible thing. But Ramirez beat her, bound her hands, while demanding to know where all her valuables were, which he should know since he'd been there before.
He's already right.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, yeah, you know, he probably didn't take notes.
Where you knew hiding spots at?
Yeah.
Well, while he ransacked the room, Maxine escaped her bonds and retrieved a shotgun from under the bed, but it wasn't loaded. Oh.
See?
That sucks.
That's a problem. That's a problem.
Now, we've got two incidents here, two clear incidents, where have people been carrying fully automatic AK-47s. This guy won't be walking around.
Well, she had a
weapon. I say everybody should be having an AR-15 on their shoulder.
She just didn't have, and that only pissed him off, didn't it?
It did. It pissed him off, and so he shot her three times with the .22, then got a carving knife.
Because you know why?
His gun
was loaded.
Well, yeah, he came prepared.
Yeah.
Let's see. So her body was mutilated with multiple stab wounds, and her eyes were gouged out and placed in a jewelry box, which Ramirez took with him. I don't know why we know that they were.
Well, she had eyes like sapphires.
Obviously, all the.
Well, I think it goes back to his cousin, you know, giving him all his horror stories, what he did to the folks in NAMM.
And all the head injuries, because he couldn't, like, bounce his head off shit.
Yeah, he was like Fred West.
Like one of my damn kids. Out can't knock his head off shit.
He did know his own dimensions very well.
Oh, God. The mutilations were post-mortem, so that was, I guess, a good thing. Ramirez left.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to be mutilated, would you rather be mutilated?
Well, that's
pre-mortem or post-mortem?
Well, I think at that point it makes a little difference to me.
Yeah. Well, it would if you were alive and I was gouging out your eyes. That would be worse.
It'd be more painful
than if you were dead and I pop your eyes out with a, you know, grapefruit spoon.
I think one eye I'd like to be alive for, just to see what it was like, because I like to see what the back of my eye looks like.
You absolutely would probably idiot.
Keep an eye
anyway,
for
Ramirez left footprints.
Keep an eye for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Write that down. Ramirez left footprints from a pair of Avias sneakers in the flower beds.
Also, he was cheap too.
He was poor.
New Balance.
They didn't have. He did not have New Balances.
No.
The police photographed and cast this footprint, and this was the only evidence that the police had at the time. Bullets found at the scene were matched to those found in previous attacks, and the police realized that a serial killer was at large. Vincent and Maxine's bodies were discovered by their son Peter the next morning. On May 14th of 1985, Ramirez returned to Monterey Park in search of another random victim and entered the home of Bill Doy, 66, and his...
let's make fun of the victims.
Name. No, let's play blame the victim here, devil.
Not blame the victim.
Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
Ain't no... This some bitch walked around shooting and killing, chopping people up, and you're giggling about it. What the hell is wrong with you?
Your mom's dead. Shut up.
She's a Satanist.
She is a Satanist.
She's getting pleasure from this.
Get behind thee, Satan.
Satanist.
She's going to have an orgasm before this thing is over.
Oh, let's not do that. I don't think so. We're going to get through. We're going to need to get through this.
She's over there quivering.
Okay, so.
You got to smoke a cigarette after this, devil.
Give it to me, Satan. Sorry, I got turned away.
Give me the high hot one, Satan.
Continue, Brandy. I'm sorry, that was unprofessional of us.
For real?
Yeah. We got young Nicole here.
Nicole, we apologize for anything.
She's offended for me. Yeah. I can't even look at her.
There's no way she's listening to this podcast when she...
Are you offended at all? Are you offended somewhat by what this girl's doing over here?
Yes. Yeah, that's what's happening. So anyway, he goes to the home of Bill Doy... and his disabled wife Lillian.
Oh my God!
He surprised Doy in his bedroom. Bill, let's call him Bill.
Surprised
Bill in his bedroom.
Big Doy,
and shot him in the face.
You got Bill Doy and the cripple Doy.
Everybody in the face.
That son of a bitch was a good shot.
And shooting everybody in the face.
Well, I bet Doy was pretty taken aback by that.
I bet he was surprised.
He was. So what shoots you in the face? You're just not expecting that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, you don't, really. So he shot him in the face.
Did he have keys? Because that would they could have reflected, you know, if
no,
he had keys.
No, he didn't have keys.
Jesus.
So he shot him in the face as Doy was going for his own handgun.
Oh, so Doy was packing.
Oh, he was packing.
He
was ready.
No, he was not packing. He had a gun in the house, but he did not have it on his person.
Yeah.
So, well, why would you wear it around if you're rolling around in your bathrobe? Just, you know, gotta get my gun belt on.
Because some stranger might come in and shoot me in the face.
Nicole, I got a question for you, Nicole. After hearing this, when you go home tonight, is the first thing you're going to do is stick a gun down in the waistband in your pants?
Oh, absolutely.
It should be. It should be. If you learn nothing from it, arm yourself, girl. Arm yourself.
God. Okay, so anyway, so that wasn't good enough, and he beat him. Ramirez just beat the shit out of him. Beat him into unconscious. Then he went into Lillian's bedroom.
Lillian.
Bound her with thumb cuffs. I don't understand, like, those Chinese thumb cuffs that you get at parties.
No, little tiny baby hand. Timmy got some downstairs from Alcatraz.
I don't like
They're the same as regular handcuffs, because once you put them on the thumbs, they can't move their arms anyway.
You can buy them at Hustler.
But I know.
Ain't never been in there. Devil been in there. Devil got one of those old cards that punch holes in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like your 10th visit, yeah. You get something free.
Yeah. No, I do not.
Do you have a member
no,
of the
they
show?
Just know me when I walk in. It's like Norm at Cheers.
You have a rewards, you have a rewards card?
Her next purchase, 30% off.
I'm getting one of those big fuzzy shoe chairs next time I go in for free. Anywho, he raped her and then ransacked the home for valuables. Bill ended up dying of his injuries while in the hospital. But then again,
Lillian
survived.
He raped the disabled woman?
He raped the disabled woman.
Oh, this vile bastard.
He did it a couple times.
He's pretty gross.
Yeah, he was.
On the night of, that was May 14th, on the night of May 29th, 1985, Ramirez stole a Mercedes-Benz and went to Monrovia and stopped at the Hell's. Oh, see, here we go. This one is gross. Stopped at the house of Mabel Ma Bell, 83, and her sister Florence Nettie Lang, 81.
Ma Bell?
Oh.
He found a hammer in the kitchen. He bludgeoned and bound the invalid Lang in her bedroom, then bound and bludgeoned Bell before using an electrical cord to electrically shock the woman. After raping Lang, he used Mabel Bell's lipstick to draw a pentagram on her thigh, as well as one on the wall of both bedrooms.
So he raped the old one?
He raped one of the old ones. They were discovered 2 days later. Both women were still alive, but they were comatose. And Bell later ended up dying of her injuries.
Tough-ass old ladies there.
They were kind of badass.
Yeah,
I mean.
And yet, and they put up.
Now, how old was these women?
They're 83 and 81.
And he raped an 83-year-old?
Let me see.
And he was a sicko.
It doesn't say.
Because you know by 81, there was...
But let me tell you something.
They had turned full man by then.
Well, come on, stop it. That's your grandma, but...
His grandma's dead.
Of course she is.
She died at my mama's funeral.
Here's the thing. I read about Richard Ramirez besides this.
And besides my still a research?
Besides your shit, here. I read a book that had actual research.
You mean
research
you actually
done.
Did research?
No, I read this a while ago. But anyway, these women, he came in, they were asleep and whatever. They put up a hell of a fight. They tore up the house. Fighting this guy off. They weren't fucking with him. These are two tough old birds, and it's a shame that one of them died. The other one never really recovered. She was already...
She's probably dead by now. That was...
Well, I'm sure she's dead by now. This was in 85, and she was 81. She was already an invalid.
120.
One of them was an invalid, and I think it was Lang. So the one that survived was already an invalid. She wasn't doing much.
How much fight could she put up?
I don't know. I would assume her arms worked.
she wheelchair butted him.
You guys are horrible people.
It's awful what this guy's doing.
Day.
We condemn it.
She tried to hit him with a walker, but she fell down.
Sort of like Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump.
Oh, poor Lieutenant Dan. He tried to run with no legs.
Yeah.
The next day, May 30th.
Magic leg.
May 30th, 1985. Ramirez drove the same car to Burbank and snuck into the home of Carol Kyle, 42. At gunpoint, he bound Kyle and her 11-year-old son with handcuffs and ransacked the house. He released Kyle to direct him where the family's valuables were and then sodomized her repeatedly. He repeatedly ordered her not to look at him, telling her at one point that he would cut her eyes out. He fled the scene after retrieving the child from the closet and binding the two together again with handcuffs. So he didn't kill them. I mean,
he just sodomized.
He sodomized the woman
and stole a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So she's damaged for life, and so is her kid.
After he
if
took
I recall,
the family
the kid
jewels,
could see yes, and if I recall, the kid could see what he was doing.
Ugh.
That's just not kosher.
On the night of July 2nd, 1985, Ramirez stole a Toyota and went to Arcadia.
Okay, so he steals a Mercedes one day, and then a few days later he steals a Toyota?
Well, the Mercedes got burned. Somebody recognized it.
Well, he started worrying about climate change and whatnot.
He was getting all into
it. Well, maybe the insurance was more expensive.
Yeah, that's true.
Couldn't afford the insurance anymore.
Drove to Arcadia and randomly selected the house of Mary Louise Cannon, 75. After quietly entering the widowed grandmother's home, he found her asleep in her bedroom. He bludgeoned her into unconsciousness with a lamp, then repeatedly stabbed her using a 10-inch butcher knife from her kitchen.
Ugh.
She was found dead at the crime scene. On July 5th, 1985, Ramirez broke into a home in Sierra Madre and bludgeoned 16-year-old Whitney Bennett with a tire iron as she slept in her bedroom. After searching in vain for a knife in the kitchen. Seriously, you can't find a knife in a freaking kitchen?
You people don't have a fucking knife in this house? Jesus, we have to use a fork?
They have a lot of Jello.
He attempted to strangle the girl.
He's bringing handcuffs. Can't he bring his own knife?
You would think.
But you can't put those in your pocket. They bother, it wears a spot. Let's see. So he hit her with a tire iron while she slept.
But he had a tire iron. He can't find a knife, but he has a tire iron.
Well, he attempted to strangle the girl with a telephone cord.
Yeah, that don't work very well.
With a what?
Telephone cord.
He attempted to strangle her with a telephone cord.
Yeah.
But he was startled to see sparks come from the cord.
he was taken aback.
And when his victim began to breathe, he fled the house, believing that Jesus Christ had intervened and saved her.
Maybe he did.
She survived the savage beating, which required 478 stitches to close the lacerations to her scalp.
Weird. She was 16, right?
She was 16.
So, unlike...
I think her parents were out of town or something.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He's not... I mean, he's just going to house to house.
Yeah, and this is a guy that was obviously into overkill.
Like, well, he basically, like the deranged Avon lady is what he is.
Was it decompensating? Like,
yeah.
Decompressing?
No.
Deteriorating.
Deteriorating.
Either one of those, but it's not. I think it's decompensating, but whatever.
Decompensating is when, like, you're taking medication and you stop taking it.
Yeah.
You decompensate.
Yeah, but I think he's going kind of along those lines.
He was
but
like
anyway.
This, Timmy.
Land Graham.
Candy Graham.
Let's see.
Night Stalker.
Again, that was on July 5th. Yeah. Well, and if you notice, too, they get closer and closer together.
Yeah, I mean, all this is... I mean, these are just like a couple days apart.
Anybody who watched Criminal Minds know that when they start getting closer and closer together, you got a problem.
You got problems.
Yeah.
On July 7th, 1985, Ramirez burglarized the home of Joyce Lucille Nelson, 61, again in Monterey Park. Finding her asleep on her living room couch, he beat her to death using his fist and kicking her head. A shoe print from his Avia sneaker... was left imprinted on her face.
Damn.
The guy should buy some new shoes.
He didn't shoot her in the
face. No, those was good shoes. If they was leaving footprints on people's forehead, they had good soles on them.
After cruising two other neighborhoods, he went back to Monterey Park, which evidently was just easy pickings, and chose the home of Sophie Dickman, 63.
It's an exclusive neighborhood.
Ramirez assaulted and handcuffed Dickman at gunpoint, attempted to rape her, and stole her jewelry. He couldn't get hard, that's why he didn't rape her.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's just embarrassing.
When she swore...
I'm sorry, this kind of thing never happened to me before. Yeah,
I swear, this never happened.
I could rape
I could rape at will. I mean, I could rape 3-4 times a night. I don't know what's going on here. Must be stress at work or something.
He stole her jewelry, and when she swore to him that he wanted to feel pretty. When she swore to him that he'd taken everything of value, he told her to swear on Satan.
I think he's playing a Satan card. He's setting up a insanity defense.
I don't think he was that bright, but that's okay. On July 20th, 1985, Ramirez purchased a machete before driving the stolen Toyota to Glendale. He chose the home of Leela Needing, 66, and her husband Maxon, 68. He burst in the sleeping couple's bedroom and hacked them with the machete, then killed them with shots to the head from a .22 caliber handgun.
Again, overkill.
He further mutilated their bodies with the machete before robbing the house of valuables. After quickly fencing the stolen items from their residence, he drove to Sun Valley. At approximately 4:15 a.m., he broke into the home of the, is it Kavanaugh family? He murdered, that's a hell of a name, Chenanarong?
Seems like it's a Cambodian name or something.
By shooting the sleeping man in the head with a .25 caliber handgun. Instantly killing him. Is there such a thing, or is that a typo?
No, it's 25.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe he stole that from another... He got that from another house, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then he repeatedly raped some kids, Kavanaugh, beating and sodomizing her. He bound the couple's terrified 8-year-old son before dragging some kid around the house to reveal just random kids.
Poor bastard get drug around the house, and he can't even get a shout-out on the show.
just some dumbass kid. Anyway...
What was the point of dragging him around the house?
He drug her around the house to reveal the location of any valuable items, which he then stole. During his assault, he demanded again that she swear to Satan that she was not hiding any money from him.
Poor some kid.
Would you swear to Satan, Brandon?
Yep. If it meant getting him the hell out of my house, I swear to whatever you want. I swear to an ostrich you got everything. It don't friggin' matter.
Could you imagine that poor bastard happening upon the devil because about 2 o'clock certain, in the morning?
Oh man. I feel certain that God would understand if I did that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
I feel sorry for him. He come in your house trying to get
my little ball bat. You shut up. Let's see. On October 6, 1985, Ramirez drove to Northridge and broke into the home of Chris and Virginia Peterson. He crept into the bedroom, startled Virginia, 27, and then shot her in the face.
Well, he's big on shooting people in the face.
You gotta shoot him in the face.
What's with him?
Well, because then they can't look at you. Shot him in the face, her in the face with a 25 caliber semi-automatic handgun. He shot Chris Peterson in the temple and attempted to flee, but he fought back and avoided being hit by two more shots during the struggle before Ramirez escaped. And both of them survived their injuries.
Good for them.
Let's see, on October 8th, Ramirez drove a stolen car to Diamond Bar and chose the home of Sakina Abawath, 27.
This guy's just on a roll.
And her husband, Elas, 31. Anyway, sometime after 2:30, he entered the home and went into the master bedroom. He instantly killed the sleeping Elas with a shot to the head from his 25.
So you know, Colonel, if someone breaks in your house, they're going to kill you before they kill Renee.
Well, no, so, and this is just for anybody listening out there, and people know the Colonel kind of well off and, you know, got a lot of stuff, nice stuff.
You're well to do.
If Richard Ramirez were to come into my house right now, or, you know, in any time in the last 3 years, he would have to face Rutabaga Walters.
Right, your dog.
And Rutabaga would chew him.
Rutabaga would let you like die, but Renee would be good.
Hmm?
Rudy would let you die, but Renee would be good.
Yeah, he would not be able to bother Renee. He would.
Yeah, but you would die.
Oh, that's the price you pay.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so, anywho.
I would die because I would
Because just, everyone else dies.
I wouldn't care.
I know.
I mean, you know.
He handcuffed and beat Sakina.
Death is your partner.
Co-pilot.
Yeah.
He handcuffed and beat Sakina while forcing her to reveal the location of the family jewelry and then brutally raped and sodomized her. He repeatedly demanded.
What's with the sodomizing?
I don't know.
I don't approve of the sodomizing.
I do not either.
Yeah, the guy's not. I mean, stealing, raping, robbing, beating people in the face. Sodomizing, you're going a step too far, I believe.
Yeah. He repeatedly demanded.
Go to hell for that.
Repeatedly demanded that she swore on Satan that she would not scream during his assault. When the couple's 3-year-old son entered the bedroom, Ramirez tied the child up and then continued to rape Sakina. He didn't hurt kids. I don't know.
Yeah, but the kids.
I know. Hopefully he's too young to remember. After Ramirez left the home, Sakina untied her son and sent him to the neighbors for help. Ramirez, who'd been following the media coverage of his crime, left the Los Angeles area and headed to the San Francisco Bay Area.
Time to get out of Dodge.
Yes. On August 18th, Ramirez entered the home of Peter and Barbara Pan. Unfortunate for him.
Peter Pan.
Yes, that's so unfortunate for him.
Was he young?
No.
He never aged.
This one did. Peter was 66 and was killed in his sleep with a gunshot to the temple from a 25.
I always wonder what happened to him.
Barbara, he got older, moved to San Francisco, married Barbara, who was 62. She was beaten, sexually violated before... Yeah. Being shot in the head and left for dead. At the crime scene, Ramirez used her lipstick to scrawl a pentagram and the phrase "Jack the Knife" on the bedroom wall.
What's that?
Yeah, it means he's a dick.
I think he got the Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra song all messed up.
When it was discovered that the ballistic and shoe print evidence from the Night Stalker crime scenes matched the Pan crime scene, then Mayor of San Francisco Dianne Feinstein divulged the information in a televised press conference.
Which pissed the police off.
This leak infuriated the detectives in the case, as they knew the killer would be following the media coverage and have an opportunity to destroy crucial forensic evidence.
This is the same Dianne Feinstein, who's now the senator of California.
Okay. Ramirez, who indeed had been watching the press, dropped his size 11.5 Avia sneakers over the side of the Golden Gate Bridge
that night.
Damn,
those are big feet. His feet bigger than yours, devil.
I don't think they are.
He was on the beautiful Golden Gate Bridge. I love that place.
He remained in the area for a few more days and then headed back to L.A. On August 24th, Ramirez traveled the 76 miles back to Los Angeles in the stolen orange Toyota to Mission Viejo and broke into the house of Bill Carnes and his fiancée, Inez Erickson, through a back door. Ramirez entered the bedroom of the sleeping couple and awakened Carnes when he cocked his 25.
Wait a minute. So they were engaged, but they were sleeping in the same bed?
They were fornicating.
Oh, they're fornicators.
They're fornicators.
They was living in sin.
Well, maybe they were just cuddling.
No.
Spooning.
Maybe. No,
spooning.
They don't.
I hate spooning.
You know what they was doing?
Well, okay. So anyway.
And he came in the back. He had a thing about back doors.
Yeah. Thing about sodomy.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
He was the backdoor man there.
So he entered the bedroom of the sleeping couple. He wakened Carnes when he cocked his 25. He shot him 3 times in the head before turning his attention to Erickson. Ramirez told the terrified woman that he was the night stalker and forced her to swear that she loved Satan as he beat her with his fists.
Yeah, that would be easy for you to do.
And bound her with neckties from the closet.
He wouldn't even have to ask you. Got it probably tattooed on your.
Do you got any tattoos? Let me see. She got to look like a pentagram on her shoulder there. Hold on.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Bend down a little, Dad. Look like you got 666 up on your hairline there.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Just give you that satanic look.
Are we done?
Yeah. We're done now.
Okay. So, after stealing what he could find, he drug Erickson to another room to rape and sodomize her.
And he goes, that's not me.
But you know what? Here's the thing I don't get. Why do you always have to take people to different rooms to sodomize the people?
Well,
you don't want to just do all that in one room. It gets messy.
Right. It gets messy.
It's gross.
Gross.
Was he sodomizing them in the kitchen?
I don't know. He then demanded cash and more jewelry, making Erickson swear to Satan that there was no more. Before leaving the home, Ramirez told Erickson, tell them the Night Stalker was here. As he left in the Toyota, 13-year-old neighbor James Romero III noticed the same weird-looking guy. The weird-looking guy in black he'd seen earlier in the night and thought suspicious, and he decided to write down as much of the license plate as he could.
So this nosy bastard...
Love his heart.
Mm-hmm. Love his heart. He sees him wandering around. He's suspicious. He writes down his license plate number, and that's good. That's a good thing.
Inez Erickson untied herself and went to a neighbor's house to get help for her severely injured fiancé. Surgeons were able to remove two of the bullets from his head, and he survived his injuries. When news of this attack broke, Romero told his parents about the strange man in the orange Toyota, and they immediately contacted police and provided the partial license plate number. Erickson was able to give a detailed description of the assailant to investigators. The stolen car was found on August 28th in Wilshire, and the police were able to obtain a single fingerprint from the rearview mirror despite Ramirez's careful efforts to wipe the car clean of his prints. The print was positively identified as belonging to Richard Munoz Ramirez, who was described as a 25-year-old drifter from Texas with a long rap sheet that included many arrests for traffic and illegal drug violations.
You gotta watch out for drifters. Drifters are...
Oh, Gandy dancers
and drifters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Law enforcement officials decided to release a mugshot of Ramirez from a December 12, 1984 arrest for a car theft to the media, and the Night Stalker finally had a face. At the police press conference, it was announced, "We know who you are now, and soon everyone else will too. There will be no place you can hide."
I love that.
Sounds very OK Corral badass.
No, well, you know, usually these nosy people are a pain in the ass, but this guy turned out to be.
He was a kid.
Yeah.
They don't usually pay attention to shit.
I know. Well, they got this guy, and so now they got a make on it. What happens, Colonel?
Well, now he's on the run, and it's interesting because on the day of Colonel, August 30th, 1985.
Someone die on that day?
The day the Colonel was getting married.
Okay.
So
Renee's
soul died.
Possibly the day the Colonel getting married.
Renee's soul died.
I have to fact check that one.
Anyway. You don't know the day you were married?
Well, it's August 31st or August 30th, one of the two.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's always confusing because my brother's anniversary was on the other day. My anniversary is on the 30th.
Yeah. Well, that's your brother's, and then...
And he's dead.
Then it's yours.
And
me and my brother, one's August 30th, one's the 31st, and
as it comes closer, she reminds me what day it is, but I'm pretty sure it was August 30th.
Hi, Renee.
Anyway.
You have our sympathy, Renee.
Dead.
So the colonel getting married to the wife, and she becoming the luckiest woman on earth.
Nope.
And he decides to jump on a bus and go to Tucson.
Not the colonel you're talking about.
I'm talking about Ramirez, yeah.
Maybe he was heading to find his brother.
Huh?
Maybe he was for your nuptials.
Well,
yeah, maybe he was going to show up for the reception.
He was trying to get his connection.
There was no RSVP from the Night Stalker.
Maybe you didn't check.
If he did, he didn't get no lasagna.
He missed his connection in Tucson.
Yeah. Are you saying if he was invited, it was from the family of the bride?
It was from Renee's family. From the girl. Because she the devil, too.
Well,
so. Continue.
And none of his family's fucked up. And they're all dead.
They're all dead, so... Yeah, my side was all lonely. There was cobwebs on the seats and shit over there.
There was programs
just sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
Empty chair.
So, yeah. Anyway.
He invited a lot of empty chairs.
Actually, most of my family was alive back then.
A couple of blow-up dolls.
They have not survived my marriage is what happened, but the colonel barely survived it. So, anyway, he goes to visit his brother in Tucson, Arizona, but his brother don't show up because he sees his brother's face all over the news. He's like, no, I ain't hooking up with you. But
bad news.
He gets off the bus in Tucson on August 31st, which may have been the day the colonel was marrying his bride.
Now let me ask you this: he's stolen about 15 cars at this point. Why is he taking a buck Greyhound to Tucson?
He doesn't have money for gas.
Yeah.
I don't know why he really got on the bus. I think he figured it was safer. So anyway, his brother don't show up. He actually walked past officers who were taken out the bus terminal.
Yeah, they were there to they had a thought that he might be traveling by bus.
Yeah. Seattle in sunglasses and have
one of those rubber nose and the
So he returns to Los Angeles, and he walks a few blocks to a convenience store down in East Los Angeles, and a group of elderly Mexican women who are much more. They're going to check things out more than the police do. They don't miss anything.
Because they're nosy.
Well, they're the elderly ones getting killed, so.
Yeah, and sodomized. No, he didn't sodomize the old people.
We don't know that.
Well, we don't. Well, anyway, they identified him as the El Matador, or the killer. So Ramirez sees his face on the covers of the newspaper rack and just runs out of the store in a panic. Holy God. He runs across a Santa Ana freeway and attempts to carjack a woman, but he gets chased away by bystanders who start chasing his ass.
Yes.
Nice.
After hopping over a bunch of fences, attempting two more carjackings, he was eventually subdued by a group of residents, one of whom kept striking him over the head with a metal bar.
Yeah.
Good.
They beat the shit out of
him. Too bad they didn't sodomize him with it.
We don't know that they did not.
Continue.
A lot happened before the cops got there.
So they held him until the police came. So they arrest him. They're going to have a trial. And this is, now we're jumping ahead to, it takes 3 years for this, 1988. So 1988, Ramirez shows up in court. He holds up his hand. He's got a pentagram drawn on it and yells, "Hail Satan."
Yeah, so, I still think he's playing the insanity card with all that Satan nonsense.
I'm telling you, he's not that bright.
And the Los Angeles Times said that some of the jail employees overheard Ramirez talking about shooting the prosecutor in the face, of course, with a gun.
In the face.
That he intended to have smuggled into the courtroom. So they put metal detectors outside the courtroom and cavity searches for everybody that came in.
Because it probably wasn't normal to have metal detectors back then.
Yeah, and then they pick the jury, they get the trial underway. But here's something interesting that happened. August 14th, the trial gets interrupted because one of the jurors, Phyllis Singletary, didn't arrive at the courtroom. And later that day, she was found shot to death in her apartment.
Ugh.
Now, the jury, they scared as hell at this point.
Oh, yeah, I would be creepy.
Satan really coming after us now. They couldn't help wondering if Ramirez could, got a hold of her.
And some reach outside of them.
But it turns out that Ramirez was not responsible. It was her boyfriend that killed her, and then he committed suicide with the same weapon in a hotel.
That's a weird coincidence, though.
Yeah, but in the alternate juror who replaced her, she was too afraid to go to her house.
Well, yeah, I guess. I'd say
Yeah. Now, this was, because of so many charges, it was very expensive. It was $1.8 million, which was the most expensive trial until
O.J. Simpson.
Until O.J. Simpson. Mm. And by the time of the trial, Ramirez has fans. I mean, you got people like the devil groupies. And that sending him. How many did he write back to you?
Oh, that's what the MR tattoo stands for.
Yeah. Did he write back to you?
Or was
he
nice to you? I guess.
So, anyway,
I thought it was a restroom.
This woman, Doreen Leoy, she was a freelance magazine editor. She wrote him about 75 letters during his incarceration.
And he did write back to a lot of these people. He wrote back to her,
and they
become
friends. There was a little spark. There was a little spark between
them.
And they fell in love.
Love blooms.
And they got married in San Quentin State Prison.
Did they have a reception?
They were not able to consummate that wedding, although there was a surrogate consummation as with Ramirez Bubba? Was walking back to his cell.
With Bubba.
Two of the guys from the Aryan Brotherhood, they caught Ramirez and consummated the marriage for him.
I think you're making that up.
He completely made that up.
It could have happened.
But no, he did get married in prison, right?
And he was in San Quentin, and in San Quentin is if you watch the documentaries on National Geographic.
Or Oz.
Mm-hmm. Or Oz. It is a stronghold of the Aryan Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. So, Ramirez raping and sodomizing old ladies, I don't think he was going to do all that well in there.
Yeah.
But eventually, now, long-distance romances, they never work. You know, so eventually him and his wife separated.
Uh-huh.
Those things happen.
Yeah.
She got most of the friends because everybody he knew he had killed. Yeah. But
did she get the jewelry? Because I bet he had a lot of it.
He really didn't have anything. Now, by most estimates, he would have been in his early 70s before he got the death penalty for all this.
I hope so. But
because of California's process, he would have been in his 70s before he got the death penalty.
Before he had actually been executed.
Yeah.
Because of the appeal process. That's what I'm saying. Like because I'm 54 now,
mm-hmm.
I could actually. The death penalty is no deterrent for me. It's only my moral compass.
Yeah, well, we're all.
Well, yeah, well, we ain't counting on that one. So anyway, Ramirez spent 23 years on death row awaiting execution. 23 years, and then he got the B cell lymphoma and buck cancer.
So he got the Ferret Fawcett anal cancer, is that what you're saying?
B-cell lymphoma and buck cancer.
And see, it's just not right.
I used a medical diagnosis.
It's just not right that him and Ferret Fawcett share the same fate.
No, it's not.
She was a very sweet lady.
I don't know that she was a sweet lady, but she was pretty.
But it's kind of ironic that she sodomized all those people and he ended up with a buck cancer.
Yeah. That's karma.
Yeah.
That's karma.
Come back and bite you in the butt.
It did.
And give
it
you did the for
him. It ripped him a new ass.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he'd been suffering from the effects of drug abuse, and he had hepatitis C.
Probably from that whore he married.
Well, he didn't get. He went into the place, and you know, you talked about the.
He might have picked it up from one of his victims, huh?
That's true. He wasn't all that. He didn't have safe sex. And if you're out there, you know, serial killers, don't be spreading your STDs around to everybody. Yeah. Wear a condom for the love of God. But anyway, he's on death row for 23 years, gets the buck cancer, dies just a horrible, painful death.
It wasn't horrible and painful enough.
And
but, you know, it is, I mean, if you're going to get something, if you're going to die of something, I'm glad he died of butt cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got the butt cancer.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
No.
I mean, you get the lung cancer, you get the even the eyeball cancer.
Yeah.
Eyeball
you know?
Cancer.
Like Lance Armstrong, he got the testicular cancer. Everybody knows Lance walking around with just one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Everyone knows that.
But you get the butt cancer, no. No, 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 no.
But while we're on the subject, while we're on this subject, you really should get that spot on your forehead checked out, Colonel.
Yeah, but that's not on my butt, Timmy, so I ain't worried about it.
Well, no, but
somebody give you
melanoma.
How many people got the forehead cancer and died?
Well, I'm just saying. You should get
Death is your co-pilot.
Yeah.
Well,
can you sit, Brandy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just okay. Get it, check it out. Cause
I get it. The Colonel go to the doctor regularly, so
okay. He, just ask him to take a look at it.
The Colonel's a bit of a hypochondriac.
No, the Colonel just like the prostate prostate exams. Yeah, they just check you out real good there. So
yeah.
Okay, so butt cancer.
Butt cancer, death, end of story.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Man, what a psycho.
Well, and you know, toward the end, it got so bad that the convicts in there, they didn't even want raping. Uh-oh. His butt was so eaten up with the cancer, they was afraid they was going to get the superstitious sure type.
Yeah. So, anyway, what a creep. Brandy, any final thoughts on Richard Ramirez?
No.
Thank you for suggesting that story. I feel much better now that we've
talked about
that.
Yeah, now that we talked about one of your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to give him a shout out?
You want to say
he's dead, much like the Colonel's mother. He's dead.
His brother's dead too.
Jesus Christ! You're some of the most heartless people in my whole life. He's my brother-in-law, for fuck's sake.
Brother. Oh, okay.
That's why you got that queer ass tattoo.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you people?
Well, we're sorry that you've lost so many loved ones.
No, I don't think you are, Timmy. I do not believe you are.
I'm sorry. I'm just kidding.
We're gonna have a GoFundMe for the Colonel for his therapy.
For having to put up with all this. There's not enough people for you to have GoFundMe page for your therapy.
Well, people don't want to be close to you, Colonel, because when they do, they get close to you, they die.
Well, but you know what, Timmy? It's the ride. It's all about the ride. It ain't about the end. It ain't about the destination. It's about the journey.
I see. That's a load of crap.
That's just when you're going someplace sucky, you say that to somebody.
That's true.
Any final thoughts, Nicole?
No.
You want to participate in one of our podcasts with us, Nicole?
I feel certain she'd rather rip her ears off.
No, I believe the girl would do well.
Oh, I think she would do well.
I have no doubt she'd do well. That's not the point.
But she probably don't want to listen to you yammer for 2 hours.
And then listen to you yammer for 2 more hours when you actually have to do work.
Yes. So, Colonel, before we wrap up, where can people find us?
Well, people can find us. Actually, now we're going to be on a Jay Leno show.
We are not.
Here, coming up next Tuesday.
No.
We're going to be on Jimmy Kimmel Live.
No, we're not. Where can people find us, Colonel?
People can find us. If you get it up here, it burns.
Brandy can find us on iTunes. Catching the Colonel on fire as we're podcasting.
Well, if you've seen the G. Gordon Liddy thing, I can hold my baby finger under a flame and it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, but he goes, if you move it up here, it burns. Now I'm holding the lighter still. He's moving
my hands
his hand
are
up
shaking
there.
A little bit.
And I smell the hair burning on
his
hand.
To find a place where it burned. I like to feel that.
So, well, she loves fire. Satan loves fire.
Smell of sulfur.
Yeah.
So, anyway, if you get on the iTunes, you can find us there.
Yeah.
You get on Stitcher.
Well, if they get on iTunes, what should they do?
Well, if you get on iTunes, what you do is you get on one of our episodes and see right where it says reviews and ratings and rate us.
Exactly, because that's how people find us.
And if tell them the Colonel sent you. Yes. You get a 15% discount.
Yes.
On.
And nothing.
On your next iPod purchase.
Okay. That's not true.
iTunes purchase.
That's not true. It's not true at all. But they can find us on Stitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Please look us up on our Facebook page. We've got a lot of cool
History Dweebs.
History Dweebs on our Facebook page, History Dweebs. We got a lot of cool stuff. We got posted up there every day. We update it every day.
Look at the History Dweebs store. We got the History Dweeb merchandise.
We have no merch, but that's not true. But if you...
We got History Dweeb t-shirts.
We do not.
History Tweebs.
We have t-shirts?
Coffee mugs?
No, we do not. But if you go on
lanyards?
If we go on our Facebook page, send us a message,
stress penises,
and we'll give you a shout out during our next podcast, which may be next summer, the way I'm feeling right now. but it'll probably be in a few days. So thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Hold on, the last thing, Timmy, we sent out 5 last week. The listeners who sent in. We got the 8x10 color glossy autographed pictures of the Colonel.
Yeah,
and there's about 5 of those.
There's a huge demand for that.
See you next week.
I got to get a new printing, new
one set out, but yeah. See you next week,
folks. Yeah. Okay, so everyone, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on History Dweebs. Bye. Say goodbye, Nicole.
Bye.
That wasn't that long.
Oh, my God. That was wretched.